Suyagyo nagayam sete.
Suyagyo nagayam sete.
Mudhayam anushochata.
Mudhayam anushochata.
Yashrota yonubhakteha.
Yashrota yonubhakteha.
Sanadrishyeta karhichit.
Sanadrishyeta karhichit.
Yamaraj continued, O lamenters, you are all fools. The person named Suyagya, for whom you lament, is still lying before you and has not gone anywhere. And what is the cause for your lamentation? Previously he heard you and replied to you, but now, not finding him, you are lamenting. This is contradictory behavior. You have never actually seen the person within the body who heard you and replied. There is no need for your lamentation, for the body you have always seen is lying here. This is the normal place where the verses are. This is a jumping ahead. So then, in the chapter summary, chapter 2. As described in this chapter, after the annihilation of Hiranyaksha, Hiranyaksha's sons and his brother Hiranyakashipu were very much aggrieved. Hiranyakashipu reacted very sinfully by trying to diminish the religious activities of people in general. However, he instructed his nephews about a history just to diminish their aggrievement. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as the boar and killed Hiranyakashipu's brother Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu was very much aggrieved. In anger, he accused the Supreme Personality of Godhead of being partial to his devotees and derided the Lord's appearance as Varaha to kill his brother. He began to agitate all the demons and rakshasas and disturb the ritualistic ceremonies of the peaceful sages and other inhabitants of earth. For want of the performance of yajna sacrifice, the demigods began wandering unseen on earth. After finishing the ritualistic funeral ceremonies for his brother, Hiranyakashipu began speaking to his nephews, quoting from the Shastras about the truth of life. To pacify them, he spoke as follows. My dear nephews, for heroes to die before the enemy is glorious. According to their different fruits of activities, living entities come together within this material world and are again separated by the laws of nature. We should always know, however, that the spirit soul, which is different from the body, is eternal, inadjustable, pure, all-pervading, and aware of everything. When bound by the material energy, the soul takes birth in higher or lower species of life according to various association, and in this way receives various types of bodies in which to suffer or enjoy. One's affliction by the conditions of material existence is the cause of happiness and distress. There are no other causes, and one should not be aggrieved upon seeing the superficial actions of karma. Hiranyakashipu then related a historical incident concerning a king, Suyagya, who resided in the country named Ushinara. When the king was killed, his queens, overwhelmed with grief, received instructions, which Hiranyakashipu quoted to his nephews. Hiranyakashipu related an account of a Kulinga bird pierced by the arrow of a hunter while lamenting for his wife, who had also been shot by the same hunter. By narrating these stories, Hiranyakashipu pacified his nephews and other relatives and relieved them of lamentation. Thus, having been pacified, Diti and Rushabhanu, Hiranyakashipu's mother and sister-in-law, engaged their minds in spiritual understanding. O King, Hiranyakashipu was extremely angry, but since he was a great politician, he knew how to act according to the time and situation. With sweet words, he began pacifying his nephews, whose names were Shakuni, Shambara, Drishti, Bhutasantapana, Vrikka, Kalanabhara, Mahanabhara,
Harish Maru and Utkacha. He also consoled their mother, his sister-in-law, Rishabhanu, as well as his own mother, Diti. He spoke to them all as follows. Hiranyakashipu said, "My dear mother, sister-in-law, and nephews, you should not lament for the death of a great hero, for a hero's death in front of his enemy is glorious and desirable. My dear mother, in a restaurant or place for drinking cold water, many travelers are brought together, and after drinking water, they continue to their respective destinations. Similarly, living entities join together in a family, and later, as a result of their own actions, they are led apart to their destinations. The spirit soul, the living entity, has no death, for he is eternal and inexhaustible. Being free from material contamination, he can go anywhere in the material world, material or spiritual worlds. He is fully aware and completely different from the material body. But because of being misled by misuse of his slight independence, he is obliged to accept subtle and gross bodies created by the material energy, and thus be subjected to so-called material happiness and distress. Therefore, no one should lament for the passing of the spirit soul from the body. Because of the movements of the water, the trees on the bank of a river, when reflected on the water, it seemed to move. Similarly, when the eyes move because of some mental derangement, the land appears to move also. In the same way, my dear gentle mother, when the mind is agitated by the movements of the modes of material nature, the living entity, although freed from all the different phases of the subtle and gross bodies, thinks that he has changed from one condition to another. In this bewildered state, the living entity, accepting the body and mind to be the self, considers some people to be the kinsmen and others to be outsiders. Because of this misconception, he suffers. Indeed, the accumulation of such concocted material ideas is the cause of suffering and so-called happiness in this material world. The conditioned soul, thus situated, must take birth in different species and work in various types of consciousness, thus creating new bodies. This continued material life is called samsara. Birth, death, lamentation, foolishness, and anxiety are due to such material considerations. Thus we sometimes come to a proper understanding and sometimes fall again to a wrong concept of life. In this regard, an example is given from an old history. In this, this involves a discourse between Yamaraj and the friends of a dead person. Please hear it attentively. In the state known as Ushinara, there was a celebrated king named Suyagya. When the king was killed in battle by his enemies, his kinsmen sat down around the dead body and began to lament the death of their friend. His golden, bejeweled armor smashed, his ornaments and garlands fallen from their places, his hair scattered and his eyes lusterless. The slain king lay on the battlefield, his entire body smeared with blood, his heart pierced by the arrows of the enemy. When he died, he had wanted to show his prowess, and thus he had bitten his lips, and his teeth remained in that position. His beautiful lotus-like face was now black and covered with dust from the battlefield. His arms, with his sword and other weapons, were cut and broken. When the queens of the king of Ushinara saw their husband lying in that position, they began crying, "O Lord, now that you have been killed, we also have been killed." Repeating these words again and again, they fell down, pounding their breasts at the feet of the dead king. As the queens loudly cried, their tears glided down their breasts, becoming reddened by kumkum powder, and fell upon the lotus feet of their husband. Their hair became disarrayed, their ornaments fell, and in a way they evoked sympathy from the hearts of others. The queens began lamenting their husband's death. "O Lord, you have now been removed by cruel providence to a state beyond our sight. You had previously sustained the livelihood of the inhabitants of Ushinara, and thus they were happy. But your condition now is the cause of their unhappiness. O King, O hero, you are a very grateful husband and the most sincere friend of all of us. How shall we exist without you? O hero, wherever you are going, please direct us there so that we may follow in your footsteps and engage again in your service. Let us go along with you." The time was appropriate for the body to be burned, but the queens, not allowing it to be taken away, continued lamenting for the dead body, which they kept in their laps. In the meantime, the sun completed its movements for setting in the west. While the queens were lamenting for the dead body of the king, their loud cries were heard even from the abode of Yamaraj. Assuming the body of a boy, Yamaraj personally approached the relatives of the dead body and advised them as follows. Yamaraj said, Sri Yamaraj said, "Alas, how amazing it is. These persons who are older than me, having full experience that hundreds and thousands of living entities have taken birth and died, thus they should understand that they are apt to die, yet still they are bewildered. The conditioned soul comes from an unknown place and returns after death to that same unknown place. There is no exception to this rule, which is conducted by material nature. Knowing this, why do they uselessly lament? It is wonderful that these elderly women do not have a higher sense of life than we do. Indeed, we are most fortunate, for although we are children and have been left to struggle in material life, unprotected by mother and father, and although we are very weak, we have not been vanquished or eaten by ferocious animals. Thus we have a firm belief that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has given us protection even in the womb of the mother, will protect us everywhere." The boy addressed the women, "O weak women, only by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is never diminished, is the entire world created, maintained, and again annihilated. This is the verdict of the Vedic knowledge. This material creation, consisting of the moving and non-moving, is exactly like his plaything. Being the Supreme Lord, he is completely competent to destroy and protect. Sometimes one loses his money on a public street, where everyone can see it, and yet his money is protected by destiny and not seen by others. Thus the man who lost it gets it back. On the other hand, if the Lord does not give protection, even money maintained very securely at home is lost. The Supreme Lord gives one protection, even though one has no protector and is in the jungle. One remains alive, whereas a person well protected at home by relatives and others sometimes dies, no one being able to protect him. Every conditioned soul receives a different type of body according to his work, and when the engagement is finished, the body is finished. Although the spirit soul is situated in subtle and gross material bodies in different forms of life, he is not bound by them, for he is always understood to be completely different from the manifested body. Just as a householder, although different from the identity of his house, thinks his house to be identical with him, so the conditioned soul, due to ignorance, accepts the body to be himself, although the body is actually different from the soul. This body is obtained through a combination of portions of earth, water, and fire, and when the earth, water, and fire are transformed in the course of time, the body is vanquished. The soul has nothing to do with this creation and dissolution of the body. As fire, though situated in wood, is perceived to be different from the wood, as air, although situated within the mouth and nostrils, is perceived to be separate, and as the sky, although all-pervading, never mixes with anything, so the living entity, although now encaged within the material body, of which it is the source, is separated from it. Yamaraj continued, "O lamenters, you are all fools. The person named Suyagya, for whom you lament, is still lying before you and has not gone anywhere. Then what is the cause for your lamentation? Previously he heard you and replied to you, but now, not finding him, you are lamenting. This is contradictory behavior. If you have never actually seen the person within the body who heard you and replied, there is no need for your lamentation, for the body who have always seen is lying here." So these are instructions of Hiranyakashipu to his mother, sister-in-law, and to his sons, who were lamenting at the death of Hiranyaksha. So it's very interesting to note that here Hiranyakashipu, he is saying all these things. He's quoting these, telling how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he acts, he's independent. He creates, maintains, destroys. The soul is different from the body. Everything is being carried out simply by the modes of material nature. The soul is desiring. It is happening. When the soul leaves, then the body is inactive. So who we are interacting with is not the body. We're interacting with the soul. But we think of it as the body. So the body is there, but the soul is gone. So the soul, we should not lament. We've never seen a soul, so why we should lament that he's gone? We never saw in the first place why we should lament now. We didn't lament before, we can't see. Why we should lament now, we can't see. So he's saying all these nice things and giving more and more. The whole chapter he just goes on explaining all this nice philosophy. So from this we can see he's very educated, very qualified. But nonetheless, we call him the king of the demons. This chapter, Hiranyakashipu, the king of the demons. So now, what makes him demoniac? He knows the scriptures, he's quoting Bhagavad, like this is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna spoke this to Arjuna. And from this, Arjuna became enlivened and then performed his duties for Krishna. And now Hiranyakashipu, he is quoting all the same philosophy. And then after this, then his mother and his sons and his sister-in-law will also become again enlivened and again perform their duties. So now, what's the difference? The very subtle difference is that Hiranyakashipu and his relatives, though they now know very nicely the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the position of the Supreme Lord, they are demons because whatever they do, they don't use it for the Lord. Even the philosophy of the Lord and of the soul, the Lord, the relationship between the soul and the Lord, they use for their own material purposes. Because he was an expert politician, he knew what to say when. So now, everyone's lamenting, you don't want them to lament and create a bad atmosphere, because life is meant to enjoy. So therefore you say, use this philosophy very nicely to establish happiness again. And then everybody performs their duties, and then we go on enjoying separately from the Lord. We do our duties, given by the Lord, but for our own purposes. Well then, here, what we see with Arjuna, he was talking about performing his duties also not for the Supreme Lord. He was lamenting about the loss of family members, and he was lamenting that all the duties would come to a stop, no one would properly perform. So then, Krishna then said, this is all very nice, but it's foolish. Because you're not understanding these duties that are to be performed for the Lord. So at the end, we see he performed his duties. He didn't do something different. He did exactly what he was going to do in the first place. But now he was doing it for the Lord. So that makes Arjuna a devotee, or the king of the devotees. And it makes Hiranyakashipu the king of the demons. Because Hiranyakashipu is not one of these, nasty, kind of hairy demons live out in the forest that anything walks by, they eat and they yell and scream and are very gross and have no, they're, what are they called? They're severely decorum impaired. They're not any of those kind of personalities. But they are very, he is very, very qualified, refined, knows the Vedic scriptures, does everything according to Vedic scriptures, right? Like even here in the front of the Bhagavatam, we have this picture, Hiranyakashipu sitting in his nice palace. He's following all the nice rules and regulations and culture and everything given by the Lord. Because it's the most fine, most refined. He wears the finest cloth, lives in the finest palaces, built all according to the Shastra, and has the finest weapons, and knows everything, the best that the Vedic culture has to offer. But he uses it for himself. Without considering the Lord. So here, though he's quoting the philosophy, he is using it for his own means. But you'll notice the interesting point in all these purports, we only read one, is that Prabhupada is taking the philosophy, because the philosophy is very clearly and well represented. Just his conclusion at the end, that we kind of finesse, just for the purpose of carrying on material activities. But otherwise, he quoted very clearly the scriptures. Very nicely he gave. So we see that even good instruction coming from not so good of a place, if it is proper, it is accepted. So here, instructions of Hiranyakashipu to his sons and relatives, we take as this is the mentality that the pure Vaishnava should accept when they have difficulties like this, when they come in contact with this problem. When friends and relatives and dear ones leave, then we don't lament unnecessarily for the body. And the instructions of Ravana on how to manage properly the kingdoms, like that is taken very seriously by all dutiful, you know, kings and other members of the society. Duryodhana's instructions are taken very seriously. Bhishma Dev's instructions are taken very seriously. So in all these cases, that the instruction themselves, if it is good, it is taken. So here, it is coming from, it may not be coming from a good place, but the instruction is valuable. So this is an important thing. The devotee, being like the bee, then they can take the pollen or the honey from wherever it may be. And in this way, they always are happy, always advance. So Hiranyakashipu was establishing himself and his family so they could get back down to their normal business of being inimical towards the Supreme Lord. Like that, you know, no use having a bunch of lamenting persons who are very disturbed. So therefore, one sees some certain reality that the material world is a place of misery. So then using the analogy of thorn taking out a thorn, that they see the reality of the material world and they are lamenting for their, you know, material position. So therefore we bring in the further or more of the spiritual understanding to remove that thorn of lamentation so that they can get back down to, you know, good old down-home material enjoyment. Right? So he's using the process very nicely. He understands the process. Just unfortunately, he doesn't understand the proper use of the process. So this brings out a very interesting point Srila Rupa Goswami makes in the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion, is that devotional service itself cannot be obtained by karma, jnana, or yoga. That someone may be very nicely performing karmic activities without attachment. Right? They have no interest in devotional service, but they are performing without attachment because they know that this is the what the scriptures say is proper. Then from that, they become liberated and they come to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta. But they still don't get devotional service. And someone in great knowledge, he knows so much about the scriptures and everything, this knowledge itself cannot attain the Supreme Lord. He may know everything about the Lord, about his pastimes, even the intimate pastimes, but unless devotion is involved, he still won't get the Lord. So, or he meditates upon the Lord, he does all these things. Maximum one can get oneself to is the platform of Brahma-Bhuta. But he cannot get the Lord. Because the Lord is attracted by the attempt at devotional service. And we may use different tools. Like we use kartals in the Lord's service, we use this microphone in the Lord's service, we use paper in the Lord's service and make books. So we're using all these different elements. So we use the activities of the material world, we use the knowledge that is given by the Lord, we use the meditation upon the Lord, all in his service, and then it becomes devotional service. Otherwise, activities not in devotional service are called karma. Activities not in devotional service is called karma. But in devotional service is called karma yoga. Jnana not in devotional service is called jnana. But used in Krishna's service is called jnana yoga. And yoga, the Ashtanga yoga system not used in the Lord's service, then is called Jnana yoga or Ashtanga yoga. It's not devotional service. But when we think of the Lord, we meditate upon the Lord, then it becomes devotional service. So the act of including the Lord favorably in our devotional service. Here Hiranyakashipu is quoting the Lord, talking about the Lord, but unfavorably. He's talking for his own purposes. So therefore, it doesn't become devotional service. So devotional service means our activities, our intelligence, our mind is engaged in the Lord's service. Then it becomes devotional service. Otherwise, like here, the king of the demons, he is very nicely used. All the processes that would be used by the great personalities, but for his own purpose. Therefore, he's the king. Right? Others are very gross, run around, make their own trouble out in the forest, like this. But other than that, they don't. But here, speaking you know, the Bhagavad philosophy, but for his own purposes. This is, you know, A-class demon. You know, best quality. Best quality demon. So from this, we learn, one, the positive aspect. We learn that the philosophy of that we're not the body, the soul, and that therefore we should not lament for what is there. At the same time, as we learn that even following all the different aspects that seemingly seem to be devotional service, if we're not doing them to please the Lord, then that devotional credit or attracting the Lord does not happen. So therefore we must always try to perform our activities for the Lord's satisfaction. Then whether the activities, what we're, the understandings that we have, and our absorption in the Lord, then that will be favorable. Otherwise, so many examples are there, a person following these things and not getting the Lord. Any questions or comments on this? Yes.
It said that they hear the message of Krishna from a non-devotee. It's like milk is touched by a snake, it's poisonous. Mm. So how is it that the Anikashi rules are inspired to take a spiritual life?
She heard it directly, but we're hearing it from other great devotees. I haven't read that far. So I don't know exactly what it said. Because it depends upon what she did. Verse that says 61. Narad Muni continued, Diti, the mother of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, heard the instructions of Hiranyakashipu along with her daughter-in-law, Urushabhanu, Hiranyakashipu's wife. She then forgot her grief over her son's death and thus engaged her mind and attention in understanding the real philosophy of life. Purport. When a relative dies, one certainly becomes very much interested in philosophy. But when the funeral ceremony is over, one again becomes attentive to materialism. Even daityas, who are materialistic persons, sometimes think of philosophy when some relative meets death. The technical term for this attitude of the materialistic person is smarshana vairagya, or detachment in a cemetery or place of cremation. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, four classes of men receive an understanding of spiritual life and God. Artha, the distressed, Jigyasu, the inquisitive, Artharthi, one who desires material gains, and Jnani, one who is searching for knowledge. Especially when one is very much distressed by material conditions, one becomes interested in God. Therefore, Kunti Devi said in her prayers to Krishna that she preferred distress to a happy mood of life. In the material world, one who is happy forgets Krishna or God. But sometimes, if one is actually pious but in distress, he remembers Krishna. Queen Kunti Devi therefore preferred distress because it is an opportunity for remembering Krishna. When Krishna was leaving Kunti Devi for his own country, Kunti Devi regretfully said that she was better off in distress because Krishna was always present. Whereas now that the Pandavas were situated in the kingdom, Krishna was going away. For a devotee, distress is an opportunity to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly.
And there's some attraction. because he comes about to do some service. So even though he's speaking in the guise of a demon, perhaps the seed is still planted because it's actually loaded. Uh-huh. He's put his time in the material world to connect with Lilo. That guy has a different mask on the stage. So maybe that's
a good point.
Could be an excellent question.
You catch that point?
Everybody is originally.
Yes. You do have the element, though, that they were engaged in the Lord's service. Consciously, while the living entities that fall into the material world, they see the Lord, they see the activities, they have the opportunity to take up, in a conscious way, that relationship with the Lord, but then they decide to not do that and to try to become the Lord themselves. So they're with the Lord, with the Lord's associates in the spiritual realm, but they haven't fully developed that affection for the Lord. So because of that, then technically they haven't really become, devotees as such on the topmost platform. It means pure, unalloyed devotional service. They're within the realm of pure, but because they haven't crossed that, then so there would be a slight difference there. So that might be it's this refinery. It's interesting though how they. It could also be just the point of them by their association and all. At the same time as Diti's husband is an impersonalist. Yeah, that's true. It just says spiritual understanding. Yeah, that's also true. Because the point is, she just continued on that understanding, that Brahma-Bhuta platform.
I'm sure probably would be quite noteworthy if she became.
Yeah, because in the next chapter, it just immediately starts off with Hiranyakashipu. Just now he's, made peace in the family. So now his next business is just becoming immortal, right? He's just talked about how, the soul is, all-knowing and this and that. And then right after all that, and there's peace in the family, and they all happily, the ladies are going off and doing their religious activities and all that. Then he immediately starts up with, here. Narad Muni said to Maharaj Yudhishthir, the demoniac king Hiranyakashipu wanted to be unconquerable and freed from old age and dwindling of the body. He wanted to gain all the yogic perfections like Anima and Lagima, and to be deathless, and to be the only king of the entire universe, including Brahmaloka. So, it's like mild contradiction. He doesn't seem to practice what he preaches, though he's an expert preacher. Very good, very successful. Doesn't seem to practice it. Yeah, otherwise it would say something about her. Though later on, then, oh no, she doesn't become, does she? It's Aditi, her sister, who has Vamanadeva as her son. Aditi somehow or another always has all the rough ones. The living beings, the soul is fully aware when they come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. It means it's one of the 55, in the 64 qualities of Krishna, the main qualities, 50 all living entities have to some degree or another. Then 5 more they can have to a slight degree, though the Lord of Vaikuntha has to a great degree, or unlimited degree. And one of those is like all-knowing, like this, omniscient. So generally you see these qualities manifest to some degree in Brahma and Shiva. Like that, they're omniscient. Like that. So the living entity on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, he has that quality. But when he's conditioned, then he thinks he is the body and he's limited by that. I think Prabhupada mentions in connection with Narad Muni, because Narad Muni is not conditioned, he doesn't think, I can't move through the space, therefore he can. When he wants, he just moves to the space. But because we're conditioned, we think this body can't do that. Therefore, we can't. But he doesn't have that conditioning, so he moves as he likes, where he likes.
read so many verses?
Why did I read so many verses? Just to make sure that it was understood how nicely Hiranyakashipu knew the philosophy. Because otherwise, and when I say, then it doesn't matter if you know the philosophy or not, or you're doing service or not, or you think of the Lord or not, if it's not done favorably, it won't be taken. Because they'll say, well, he's a demon anyway. You know, how much does he know? So then I went through it so many verses just to show that he knew down to the finest degrees of what we know of why we're not the body. In fact, so many more examples to give. I mean, where I stop reading, keeps on going. You know, and this is 44, it keeps going until verse 60, just giving philosophy. So just to make it, to appreciate how the greatest of demons, they know so much. Like Dhritarashtra, there's a chapter, I think, ill-motivated Dhritarashtra in the Krishna book. So it's three pages of Dhritarashtra telling about Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how he's the controller, whatever he wants will happen, this, that. He knows he's the Supreme and this is his desire and his son is bad. He knows everything. But because of his attachment, he can't follow it. So Hiranyakashipu is the same. But, just to bring that out, I'm sorry if it was too boring, but that was the purpose. Just to appreciate how demoniac he is.
You could study so many verses that you are not this bad.
Yeah, yeah. So it's very, very nice. So therefore, for the devotee, it's a tool. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, or Baladev, one of them points out that the knowledge, these kind of knowledge, is used by the devotee to get himself to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, because without it you can't get there. Like that. So then you use that, but it itself burns itself up. Just like fuel in a fire. The fuel is the fire burns because of the fuel. And it burns up the fuel, but when it's finished, because the fuel is burnt up, the fire is also gone. So many times we think knowledge, all this knowledge we're going to take with us. But we're not going to take the knowledge with us back to the spiritual realm any more than we're going to take this body. Right? So therefore, this knowledge is a tool to get us to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. And the engagement of the body in activities of Krishna consciousness, Karma Yoga, that is going to bring about the purity and the illumination by which we can understand this knowledge. So the two of them are tools by which we will get to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Then, without any hampering of the material nature, the attraction of material nature, then, knowing devotional service to be the goal, we will continue in devotional service. And then by that hearing and chanting, we'll become completely attracted by Krishna and fall in love with Krishna. But we can't get fully in love with Krishna as long as we have all this material attachments. So this is tools to get rid of it. It's just like you're in a prison. You may have a key. So you use that key to get out of the prison. And then after that, you have no more need for it. You don't need that key moving around in the world. In fact, if you keep the key, then you'll always kind of, well, you know, hey, you want to come and see the lock that you know, I used it from? And then we can get attracted, you know. Like that. So therefore, it's left at the Brahma-Bhuta platform. And then the real knowledge means knowledge of our relationship with Krishna and working in that as rasa. That is the manifestation of the samvit. Like that. That is what continues eternally. But this technical knowledge like this, that we leave. Like that. Though for preaching, it'll be used. Therefore, all the nityasiddhas and other advanced devotees who come down and preach, they know it all. And they preach it because they take the mood of the madhyas. And when they take the mood of the uttams, they don't bother with it. So, let's go end here. Sorry, Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki, Srinashengide, Viki, Jaina Dagoda, Prima.